Yeah. Do-do-do-do-do. Radio Netherlands. Any moment now, I guess they're going to give me the cue to announce this program, Media Network, but until then, I just got to sit here. Maybe I'll tune down to Deutsche Welle. No, I want to do that. Oh, here comes a signal.
Hello, this is Radio Netherlands calling back. Can I speak to the engineering department, please?
Just a minute.
Engineering, Dale. Can I help you?
Hello, Dale. This is Jonathan Marks of Radio Netherlands calling you from Holland.
You talk funny, mister.
I'm sorry. I'm speaking all the way from Europe. That's why.
Just a second. George has just gotten in a minute ago. I told him that you'd called, and he wants to talk to you.
Great. Thank you.
So this is, I think it was John Marks from Radio Netherlands.
Media Network, the weekly communications review, hosted by Jonathan Marks.
1:22 into the program already. Welcome to our review of broadcasting developments. Important news about our transmission schedule is coming up, so start searching for a pen. And we'll be looking at how international broadcasters are profiling on stations around the world. Take Venezuela, for instance.
Rumbo. A continuación, Radio Rumbo transmite un recuento informativo directo desde Holanda con Radio Nederland vía satélite con el sistema PanamSat.
Networks like Radio Rumbos make regular use of programs fed over the Pan Am Sat from our studios here in Hilversum. But what started for us in Latin America and the Caribbean is now spreading to other parts of the world, as Diana Janssen now reports.
Radio Netherlands English service is currently on the air on medium wave, short wave, and in some parts of Europe you can even hear it on FM, like the Amsterdam cable. But now we're looking into improving the coverage of our Dutch service, especially in areas where Dutch people go to spend their vacation. This past Monday, a series of test transmissions began using the transmitter of the commercial radio station Radio Benidorm on 103.8 MHz FM. And Benidorm is on the Costa Blanca in the south of Spain.
Dit is Radio Nederland Wereldomroep met actualiteiten, nieuws uit Nederland en muziek in samenwerking met Radio Benidorm.
Joining me here in the studio is Joop Haynes, who's coordinating the project for Radio Netherlands. So, Joop, how long will the experiment last?
The experiment lasts till the 25th of March. We are now broadcasting on a daily basis, except the Sunday, because we couldn't get airtime on a Sunday.
And whom is it aimed at?
It's aimed at a very special audience. Generally, you can say people who have retired. So you're talking about people as from their 50s, 60s, people who are usually in financial comfortable circumstances and they spend the cold winter in the southern part of Europe where it's nice and sunny at present.
But what happens when those people go back home? We don't have an audience anymore?
When those people come back home, we don't have an audience of that age group. But we do have a substantial audience also in summer, of course, when Dutch tourists go to the Spanish coast, and then we talk about hundreds of thousands. But this experiment is mainly aimed to establish whether this Dutch-speaking audience, and then we are talking about 25 to 30,000 people of Dutch origin, and about the same number of people of Flemish origin, whether they appreciate a daily Dutch program on this local radio station, Radio Benidorm.
Joop, thank you. If you want to hear the feed to Benidorm, then point your satellite dish to Eutelsat 2F1, which is at 13 degrees east. We use the transponder on 11.554 gigahertz, subcarrier 7.74 megahertz with horizontal polarization.
Now, a look ahead to future editions of Media Network coming your way in the next few weeks.
In response to many requests, I'll be investigating developments in the field of digital audio broadcasting.
Are broadcasters in Europe still shouting, Eureka 147?
It not only gives a better quality in the sense that the sound quality is better, you can have CD quality, but at the same time you can have normal quality but more programs.
And whatever happened to the radio data system for AM broadcasters? In Cologne, it looks like it's alive and well.
You might be able to hear it if you're a very experienced listener, but the system was designed in such a way that it is inaudible for normal reception systems, for normal AM receivers.
Will the system work on the SSB?
Well, simple answer, no.
Rwanda faces enormous challenges to get back on its feet. Radio is trying to help, and Radio Netherlands reports from the scene.
Vous êtes à l'écoute de Radio Minuart. Il est 18h à Kigali, l'heure de nos émissions en français. Bienvenue à tous.
It's a UN-owned and operated radio system, a national broadcast system, that will broadcast to the people of Rwanda and the refugees in the refugee camps and surrounding countries.
The Dutch Ministry for Economic Affairs says Holland should become the electronic port of Europe. Has that a chance of success?
Is Philips really inventing for you?
The electronics giant has backed high-definition television, CD Interactive, and the digital compact cassette. So why are none of these concepts succeeding? Get all the facts in the forthcoming editions of Media Network, coming soon to a wireless near you.
Okay, let's swing a satellite dish round to Intelsat 601 at 27.5 degrees west. On 11.515 gigahertz vertical, you'll find the television channel Country Music Television Europe, which shows clips all day and all night. But if you select the audio subcarrier 7.38 megahertz, you get this.
I'm Michael Connor. It's 48 degrees. Alan Archer's exclusive three-day satellite forecast is coming up, along with Richard Thomas's first look at this afternoon's traffic following NBC News on your news, weather, and traffic station. AM 650 WSM Nashville. It's 4 o'clock.
NBC Radio News.
The sound of medium-wave country music station WSM, mixed in with some strange tones which interrupt the audio every now and then. That's in fact normal because the 7.38 MHz subcarrier is used to send Q tones. When they go out, machinery at cable stations can be triggered to play local television commercials or give a station identification.
Radio networks often use the same idea to make you think that a big-name host is presenting a program right at your local radio station, when in fact the same program is on every little radio station right across the country. George Stevenson is the studio supervising engineer at WSM. He explained to me why their station is mixed in with control tones for country music television on a service beamed to Europe.
Well, we thought it just might be fun to put that up there just to keep the channel busy, rather than have it sit there quiet except for the control tones.
WSM can be heard on other satellite services out of the home of country music. The Nashville network carries some of it some of the time, and CMT in the USA even has a stereo music feed. So what's the connection?
TNN, the Nashville network, and CMT, country music television, and CMTE, and the Asian version, are all properties of Gaylord Entertainment, and so is WSM. We also have FM here, and of course AM, WSM AM, is the home of the Grand Ole Opry. So on Friday and Saturday nights, when the Opry's on, that subcarrier will have the Grand Ole Opry.
At the moment it's only in mono, but I guess your AM signal's only in mono too.
No, we're in stereo locally. We're one of just two stations here in Nashville that broadcast in stereo on AM.
And how long have you been up on the European beam, as it were?
Well, I guess it's approaching a month.
Have you had any response?
We've had a couple of other calls, strangely enough, from the Netherlands.
There's a guy at WSM who's interested in long-distance reception of the station, so any feedback on the subcarrier, 7.38 megahertz, on Intelsat 601, 11.515 gigahertz, should be sent to this address. Tom Bryant, care of WSM Radio, 2644 McGavock Pike, and McGavock is spelled M-C, capital G-A-V-O-C-K, Pike, Nashville, Tennessee, 27214 in the USA. That's WSM Radio 2644, McGavock Pike, Nashville, Tennessee, 37214 in the USA, for the attention of Tom Bryant.
We're right on the edge of the Opryland complex, northeast of downtown by, some 6 miles. Been around since about 1925.
Oh.
And we've been on the same antenna since 1932.
Good gracious. You've done some maintenance since then.
Well, it was built when they knew how to build steel that would last, before they started working on the concept of planned obsolescence.
In fact, the antenna tower at WSM was a unique design, of which only five were built by Bell Laboratories. It's roughly the shape of two ice cream cones pushed together. There was one in Europe, but that was destroyed by the war. Then WABC in New York had one, but that was taken down when they moved their transmitter site.
And then WLW in Cincinnati, Ohio, and ours here in Nashville are the two remaining that we know about. And since ours is a little bit lower in frequency than WLW, it's a little bit taller. It's a little over 800 feet.
George Stevenson. Now, looking back in the archives the other day, I found a feature we did on radio listening without a radio. Some stations have their output available on a dial-up telephone line. We tried the numbers that used to be active in Britain for stations like Capital Radio in London and some BBC local radio stations, but none of them work anymore. Maybe somebody has more information. At least they don't work if you try to activate them from the Netherlands. The choice of listening to shortwave stations live down the telephone is rather limited. Voice of America in English is available by dialing 1 for the United States, then 202 for Washington, and then 619-1979. The furthest station we could get down the telephone was the standard time and frequency station, WWVH in Hawaii. If you're feeling extravagant, give them a call on 1-808-335-4363. Call them on the hour or half hour and you'll get their identification.
This is radio station WWVH, Kauai, Hawaii, broadcasting on internationally allocated standard carrier frequencies of 2.5, 5, 10, and 15 megahertz, providing time of day, standard time interval, and other related.
And then my money ran out. There has been speculation, though, in some of the internet news groups that the U.S. federal government was planning to cut the services of both WWVH and its counterpart, WWV, in Fort Collins, Colorado. We called the U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology in Boulder, and a spokesman for the Time and Frequency Division assured us that for the time being, the clocks will keep ticking away on 2.5, 5, 10, 15, and 20 megahertz.
You understand that the American government's not completely under control at all times, but I can't imagine that we're going to turn off WWV. My guess is that started out as a rumor and grew from there, but there's no basis for that kind of stuff. Our budget for next year is not dramatically changed. I mean, you understand we haven't gotten any fantastical increases, but we're going to be here next year, too.
A company called Obscure Intermedia in Rockford, Illinois, in the USA, has been offering a strange cassette tape.
At the tone, 2 hours, 30 minutes, coordinated universal time.
The cassette tape is also called At the Tone. It's a collection of rare announcements from WWV between 1959 and 1979. It are technical errors and original announcements from the days when Mountain Standard Time was in vogue. GMT, remember that? And AM and PM? Collector Lloyd Matthiessen wants $7 for 1 hour of unedited original announcements for your listening pleasure. We called the company at 815-229-7121 and got a very obscure answering machine. So we can't tell you why Lloyd thinks this is a marketable product. But who knows, there may be thousands of satisfied customers out there.
I wonder. Well, probably a more interesting collector's item is related to the history of jingles. At the end of last year, we profiled two jingle companies with a transatlantic connection, Top Format in Harlem, here in the Netherlands, and Jam Productions of Dallas, Texas in the USA. Jonathan Wolfert, who started Jam in 1974, has now issued a double compact disc set covering the history of the operation over the last two decades. Unlike professional jingle packages, you don't have to be a radio station to get hold of these two CDs. The Jam receptionist in Dallas confirms that for $14, the two CDs are available for everyone. Naturally, of course, Jam only talk about their customers, but it is a fascinating two-hour look into the world of creative music production, and Jam's certainly one of the big names out there in Radioland.
Just inside the main entrance to Jam, there's an engraved plaque. It goes unnoticed by most, but those curious enough to ask about its meaning receive this explanation. The Latin words on the plaque mean, it takes time to make things. And it serves as a reminder that creating something perfect always requires more time than you can possibly imagine. Perhaps the best example of that is the birth of a new custom jingle package, a package that's custom created to a station's specifications from the ground up. Let's go behind the scenes and follow the creation of a custom jingle from inception to broadcast. Of course, every assignment is different. The instrumentation, talent, and production techniques all vary to suit the project. But one thing never changes: the incredible number of hours that go into creating each and every Jam jingle. Everything you're going to hear is authentic. Although condensed, nothing has been staged or recreated.
Jam, 20 years in 20 minutes. You're the reason we play Nashville's music and more every day.
Yes, just when you thought that your local radio station had a unique jingle package, you discover they're singing the same music to different words all over the world. Jam's address is 5454 Parkdale Avenue, Dallas, Texas, 75227 in the USA. That's 5454 Parkdale Avenue, Dallas, Texas, 75227 in the USA. The phone number, one for the US, then area code 214, then 388-5454. On the subject of anniversaries, Mike Barraclough in Letchworth, Hertfordshire in the UK, phoned the answer line to say that to mark the centenary of Marconi's first test transmissions, a new series of tests on shortwave and medium wave from Chapel Green Community College in Sheffield, England, are taking place. The tests are in partnership with Hately Antenna Technology, who it seems are developing new and smaller antennas for medium and low-frequency broadcasting. The frequencies being used are 1413 kHz and the unusual 2404.5 kHz. Mike says he can hear 2404.5 kHz at his location just north of London. They're carrying a continuous loop of country music. Talking of strange frequencies, several calls to the answer line noting that Vatican Radio from the Vatican City is now using 4010 kHz for their transmissions from 0330 to 0745 and again 17 hours to 2110 UTC. We note heavy telex interference in Hilversum during the evenings.
Media Networks News Review.
Joey Kitus in Loma Linda, California, USA, sent us a note asking whatever happened to compatible single sideband.
The idea was to squeeze more channels out of the existing shortwave broadcast bands by removing one sideband, usually the lower, and reducing the level of carrier wave. This way, one station, say Radio Netherlands, could put out its powerhouse signal on 9840 kHz, while a weaker station on nearby 9835 kHz would be just as easy to tune, since the upper sideband of the 9835 station would not be crashing into Radio Netherlands' lower sideband. Presuming both stations were broadcasting in compatible single sideband, either could still be tuned on a conventional receiver. On a receiver with a synchronous detector, the stations would come through in all their glory. Sony's ICF SW7600G seems to anticipate this by incorporating a synchronous detector in a set that sells for about $200. Radio Netherlands was so excited about the prospect that they even issued a special compatible single sideband QSL card. In those days, you could easily hear the difference. The special test signal was virtually indistinguishable from an ordinary shortwave broadcast, except that it seemed to fade to distortion a bit more often. About the only station I can find that still broadcasts in compatible single sideband is CHU, the Canadian Time Signal Station, on 7335 kHz.
Well, joining me in the studio is Jan-Willem Drekshager, head of Radio Netherlands Distribution and Frequency Planning Department. Jan-Willem, I believe that Deutsche Welle, Radio Finland, Radio Norway International and Radio Austria International have experimented with compatible single sideband. We've done it too, but it's quite disappeared from the schedule, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. We used to have it on 17605 in a transmission towards Africa, but last winter we stopped with it. However, this summer we will be using it again on our North American transmission.
That's at 2330 UTC?
Yes, it starts at 2330 UTC, 2 hours on 9840 kHz.
But as far as we're concerned, it's still an experiment.
Yes, that's right, although we use it this time actually to solve a collision. We had a problem in our last frequency coordination meeting in Torino last week, where we discussed the frequency problem on 9840 together with the Hungarian delegation, and we were able to solve the collision by using upper sideband.
Now, if compatible single sideband were ever to take off, it would require all the stations on the dial to play the game. I mean, you can't have a mixture of AM and compatible single sideband, can you?
Yes, well, that would actually, of course, be the best, because that would give much more space on the dial. It's rather expensive to install it in several transmitters, although at the end it might pay itself a bit back by energy conservation.
Right, okay. You mentioned a summer schedule there. That's now been finalized at that conference that you were hinting at in Italy last week. Before our program schedule on target goes to the printers, let's have a sneak preview then. What's changing?
Yes, well, a major change will be our transmission to North America West. Instead of 330 UTC, we'll start this transmission this coming summer at 0430 UTC. This is to make place for a Spanish transmission, which will be 2 hours.
So it's a bit like the English block, two-hour blocks.
That's right.
And, of course, the problem there is that prime time in North and South America is at roughly the same time. So we've only got one relay station, so we have to make a choice.
That's right.
Now, we normally keep all our broadcasts locked into UTC, so if this show goes out, let's say, at 0750 UTC in the winter, then it goes out at 0750 UTC in the summer as well. But we will be making an exception to that rule for English to Europe via Kaliningrad on 1386 kHz. I guess that's because otherwise it would be far too late here.
Yes, we will move this transmission 1 hour earlier in terms of UTC, so in local time it will stay the same as this winter. We'll have this transmission at 20.30 UTC until 22.30 UTC.
So that's English to Europe at 20.30 UTC on 1386 kHz as from Sunday, March the 26th. We'd also like to thank listeners for the reaction to our call for feedback on the lunchtime transmissions.
This is Steve Kuschert from Freiburg in Germany. I'm an Australian that has a very tedious job working with snakes in import-export business, reptile shop in Germany. The only thing that gets me through the day is listening to your lunchtime broadcast.
We had a lot of calls as well as letters and faxes about 1130 UTC. In fact, we had 1,348 reactions that said clearly that we should keep our lunchtime broadcasts on shortwave. And so that's what we're going to do. Here's another case of listener power at work at Radio Netherlands.
But we're planning new frequencies for that 1130 UTC transmission.
This winter we are using 7130 kHz from Nauen. We will keep on using Nauen this coming summer, but the frequency will be 9650 kHz. And the other frequency will stay the same, 6045 kHz, maybe from Flevo, or we're also looking at the possibility to use Jülich from Germany.
Right, so that's the exchange agreement with Radio Deutsche Welle.
That's right.
Now for that, now this.
Radio Canada International.
Radio Canada International.
Radio Canada International is celebrating 50 years on the air this coming Saturday. There have always been close ties between Radio Netherlands and RCI in the programming, research and frequency coordination fields. But we didn't realize that the international radio ties go right back to the start of the operation. Arthur Siegel is now Professor of Social Science and Mass Communication Studies at York University in Ontario. For many years, he's worked as an editor in RCI's newsroom and has just completed a manuscript on the history of the station. There was an experimental period.
Now, broadcasting began about a month early on what they call an experimental basis on Christmas Day in 1944. But the actual, the formal opening was on February 25th, which is this coming Saturday.
And what about languages that were used in those times? I guess it was getting a signal back to Europe was the priority, was it?
When RCI was first authorized by the Canadian government, it was called the International Service. The idea was that it would be used for psychological warfare as a weapon against the Germans. But by the time they went on the air, it took 30 months till the station could be completed. There was a terrible shortage of equipment. So by the time they went on the air, the priorities had changed. Canada had 500,000 troops in Europe at the time fighting. And so the main emphasis was on contact with the troops in Europe. But at the same time, the first four languages were going to be French and English, Dutch and German. But they couldn't find immediately a person who could do Dutch broadcasting. So they searched around and they found instead a person who could do Czech broadcasting. So Dutch didn't start until a month or so later.
Members of the Dutch royal family spent time in exile in Canada, and there were other links between the two countries.
The very first mail came from a listener in Holland. And some of the very earliest broadcasts, which were done by broadcasters accompanying the troops, were from the ditches in Holland. And apparently they had a horrible winter that year. It was raining terribly and battles were brewing and I believe we still have on tape some of these broadcasts.
In some cases, the Canadian soldiers mixed very well with the local population. Dutch war brides wrote in reaction to the shortwave transmissions.
And the main question was, how can we get to Canada with our husbands or with our fiancés? So there was a strong interest of a romantic nature. Now, one of the first Dutch broadcasters hired by Radio Canada International was a war bride herself, Maya van Steensel, who had married a Canadian soldier in Holland, and she came to Canada and immediately got a job with Radio Canada International and broadcast back to Holland. She was an underground hero who, it was said, kept a large knife hanging in her office as a memento that she had used in her underground days.
Siegel says the most dynamic years for RCI were just after the war. As the Cold War developed, though, there were two approaches, one to West, the other to Eastern Europe.
Now, Canada began broadcasting in the Russian language in 52, and then shortly afterwards, Canada began broadcasting to the Ukraine, and Canada was the only country in the world until very recently that had a separate Ukrainian service. Then they started broadcasting in Polish, Hungarian, and other Eastern European languages. Of course, Czech was the first language to Eastern Europe going to the very first days.
Despite a limited budget, RCI has been remarkably successful in terms of dollars per listener, and it's always helped organisations like the United Nations. In fact, the Sackville transmitter site in New Brunswick was used by UN Radio just after the war. Today, RCI also broadcasts to Canadian peacekeeping forces serving under the UN flag. The first budgetary cutbacks, though, started in 1958, when Canada decided earlier than others that détente was a better policy than confrontation.
There have been a number of attempts over the years to shut it down completely, and RCI was supposed to have closed down in 1991. The infrastructure is there to rebuild RCI, but one has to wait and see the government's will. It is not an easy time for RCI today.
And budget cuts have delayed plans for the RCI book that Arthur Siegel was working on.
Well, the book is completed, and I'm just ready to send it to publishers, searching out a new publisher, since the previous publisher, which was a CBC Enterprises, has stopped all, for budgetary reasons, does not publish at the moment.
RCI will know if it has to face yet more cuts in the next few weeks. Meantime, RCI's program director, Alan Vermillion, says they will do something very special at the weekend.
We're not celebrating in a grand, grand style because of our budget, but we are planning to have a special program in all of our 8 languages on Saturday, which will feature a special on our 50th anniversary, going back with sound clips from our archives to February the 25th, 1945.
Looking forward to listening to it. Now we're off to Australia, where Mike Bird is waiting with a propagation survey.
The sun produced an M1 solar flare at 0321 UTC on Monday, and the geomagnetic field was quiet to unsettled. Solar activity ranged between low and moderate levels. The solar flux ranged between 85 and 95. The average works out to 89.1, which equals an effective sunspot number of 33, which is up on the previous week's level of 24. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 12 and 4, which represents unsettled to quiet conditions. So, there we have it. Fairish conditions, Jonathan.
Not bad. Now, what about between now and next Thursday?
Well, IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will be low, with a slight chance that it might become moderate, with just the odd solar flare taking place. The geomagnetic field should be quiet to unsettled until Sunday, when we expect a coronal hole will produce active conditions until Friday, the 3rd of March.
Thanks, Mike. Also to Diana Janser for background help behind the scenes. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.